Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, my name's Jess Phillips, and this is Yours Sincerely. At the start of the very first lockdown, I was seeing so many of my constituents who were losing loved ones to COVID-19 without a chance to say goodbye. Women putting their husbands into ambulances and never seeing them again. It got me thinking about what I would say to my husband and kids if I never got a chance to tell them how much I loved them. So I wrote them each a letter, and I still keep it in a safe place. I've always been a prolific letter writer, both the good and bad kind, and know the power of putting words on paper. So in this podcast, I want to give my guests a chance to celebrate three people that mean the world to them. Someone they love, someone who's no longer around, and someone who doesn't realise how significant a role they've played in their lives. And when we've heard more about each person, they'll reveal how they would sign off each letter. In this episode, the Reverend Canon Kate Botley is imagining her three Yours Sincerely letters. Reverend Kate Botley is a Church of England priest in North Nottinghamshire, as well as a journalist and presenter. She rose to fame on Gogglebox. She's written for publications like The Guardian and regularly presents shows like Songs of Praise, The One Show and The Sunday Morning Live. Kate is passionate about her faith, her family and outdoor swimming, to the point where she completed 365 outdoor swims in 2019. And today, I'm excited to talk to her about the letters she would send to three people who mean the world to her. Hello, Kate. How are you doing?
Hello, my lovely. I'm really well. Yeah, well, you know, fair to middling after the last 18 months or so. You know, it's been a journey, hasn't it?
Yeah, my husband keeps saying that you can just discount the COVID year, so I'm only 38. It has been a journey. So we're here to talk about letters and letter writing. I am a prolific letter writer, both politically and in my personal life. In fact, I have this thing that happens to me all the time where politicians, is obviously where I get it from, say, oh, your dad sent me a letter today. And I think, oh, God, what's he said? What has he said? So are you a bit of a letter writer?
I am a letter writer, yeah. I mean, I have to confess that they're not usually sort of lengthy bits of paper. They're usually just a postcard or something popped in the post. But I've got five brilliant godchildren. The thing is, when you're a bit religious, is people ask you to be a godparent, you see. So you collect them. A lot of people are like, oh, yes, she's a vicar, we'll ask her. So I've got five godchildren that I endeavour to keep in touch with. In fact, for Lent a couple of years ago, I wrote to every godchild every day of Lent. So 40 days, five letters a day.
That is ridiculous undertaking.
And it was one of those things that, actually, the letter bit was fine. It was being bothered to put a stamp on and walk to a postbox. That was what took the effort every single day.
My son recently had to write a thank you card for his auntie in Sheffield, not his real auntie, you understand, just a friend of his.
Well, yeah, I'm from Sheffield. We have those kind of aunties.
So, yeah, you know, that is just the working class, everybody is your auntie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he sent it, but he didn't put a stamp on it. And so she sent this brilliant letter back that was really, really long about the postal service, educating him on the postal service because she'd had to pay for the letter.
Well, I had to throw myself on the mercy of the postal service the other day because I left a pile of cards on the side, letters that I'd written to the godchildren. I'd left a note to my husband saying, please post the postcards. But one of the letters didn't have a stamp on and didn't have an address on. And also had my godson's 18th birthday money in it. So we weren't posting that one. I was going to drop it round at his house because he only lives two streets away. Guess what happened?
Oh.
They all went in the box because I said post the letters. So they all went in. But yeah, I love writing letters. And I also write quite often to people that if I see something on the news or something on social media that I think, actually, that's a great story, I will write to the person and thank them. If they've rescued the puppy from the ocean or whatever it is they've done, I'll sometimes drop a letter in the post and encourage people. You know, if someone's getting a hard time in the public eye, I'll sometimes write a letter with a stamp on it just as a sort of, you know, I've got you sort of thing.
It is lovely receiving those sorts of letters. It's a real kindness, that sort of thing.
You and I get a fair few green ink letters, as they're called, don't we, right? You know, where, I mean, I remember when I first did, I came to sort of fame, if you want to call it that word. We don't like the F word, but we'll say it anyway. I came to fame after a flash mob I did for a wedding that went viral and it got 10 million hits on YouTube. And I just wasn't braced for it at all. And of course, because I'm a vicar, my address is fairly public, or it was then. And I just wasn't ready for this kind of barrage of projection of hate onto me. You know, everything everybody was angry at. In fact, one person even wrote to me about the Church of England pension scheme and how angry they were about that. And somehow this was my responsibility. I've no idea why. I even got Cliff Richard's birthday cards got sent to me because, you know, I'm a Christian, so I must know Cliff Richard, right?
Oh, so I get stuff for the Queen.
It's weird. You get stuff for the Queen?
I get stuff for the Queen.
You must know her, right?
You must know her. You work in a palace. You must know the Queen. So, but also, she's got a very widely available address, so you could just send it to her. I do get a lot of messages. If you could mention to somebody in Parliament, could you just pass this on? And I just think, oh my gosh, why are you writing to me?
In the canteen. By the way, here you are. I've got this for you.
Malcolm in Dewsbury thinks you shouldn't wear your hair like that.
Yeah. The thing is about those letters is actually they're quite sweet because, you know, these days we get people just shouting at us on social media, right?
Yeah.
Or saying nice things on social media. And so when the letters come through, they definitely fall into two camps. They're either people who are really, really happy and have taken the time to write, or people who are really, really not happy and taken the time to write. And the level of anger.
Ridiculous.
And misogyny and all sorts of stuff that gets projected. So you just, what I try and do now is when I get those letters is try and hold them the same. And, you know, try and go, well, you know, these are just people trying to process something that they feel able to sort of give me and go, you know, you hold this for a bit. So I just go, okay, I'll just hold your bags for you. And I
You're
tend to
nice.
Pray for them. No, I'm not. I'm not, because I'm saying that. But actually, in my head, I'm going, you. So
I've learnt to enjoy hate mail, I have to say. Maybe as a part of this podcast, maybe I'll read out one of my most choice hate mails from the week.
That's probably why you do your job and I do mine, though, eh?
I find you have to find some amusement in it, otherwise it will drive you absolutely mad. So do you have any letters, special letters from the past that you have kept?
Yeah, I do. I have it wasn't a letter that came through the mail. It was a note that somebody slipped onto my... I was in a cafe, Marks and Spencer's Cafe, and a cup of tea with my mum. And my mum was doing that thing that she does because she's got a daughter who's on the telly sometimes. And she's doing that looking round, seeing who's looking like that. Yes, it is her. Yes, it is her. Like that, like my mother does. And this woman just walked past the end of the table and she put a note on our tray and then walked off. And I thought, oh no. It's going to be one of them, isn't it? I think you're dreadful. And I opened it and it was just, it's making me a bit teary now, and I keep it in my wallet. And it said, thank you for your Sunday morning radio show. My husband died a few weeks ago and I ain't been able to sleep. So I've been listening to early morning radio and you've really helped me. And I've kept that letter. And whenever the little monkeys are on my shoulder, you know, telling me that faffing about on radio and telly isn't proper vicaring, or, you know, that sort of nonsense, I open that letter and I go, actually, this is just as much part of my ministry as, you know, any of the other bits that I get to do.
I mean, absolutely. We're constantly told as women that having a platform is somehow a deficit on us, that we're not doing proper work. It's not proper politics to be talking to people. It's not, you know, proper religion and proper preaching unless you're doing it in an old-fashioned way. And it's just a way to try and silence you. So that woman's letter.
And I still don't know who she was. And she didn't put a name on it. She just slipped it onto my tray and just walked off. And it was just such a gentle affirmation. It wasn't my mother looking around going, yes, it is her. You know, it was just a really quiet keep going. It's one of those things that I really love. I love that letter. It's in my purse. Aww. It's in my wallet.
Oh, that is so lovely. So this podcast is all about writing letters that celebrate the people who matter to us. And, you know, I'm constantly aware that, and especially you must see this all the time in your job, that people say things when people are gone, or we have a couple of moments in our lives. Like, I really want to get remarried, not because I don't like my husband, I really do like him, but I'd like to get remarried because there are friends who've come along in my life in the last 20 years, and I'd like an opportunity to make a speech and celebrate them.
Just do it anyway.
And I could just make a point of order in the House of Commons. It's point of order, Mr. Speaker.
I've always said that I'm probably gonna have my wake and my funeral before I die, because what's the point in all those people saying all those nice things? And also, if I'm not there to hear them, but also there's so many people diverse in my life that I've never had in one room. Like, are we talking about my godchildren? I've never had all five of my godchildren because they're from different parts of my life. Never had them in the same room all at the same time, and I'd really love that to happen. So I'm with you all the way.
So it's that thing where you get to say something about somebody that means the world to you. So starting with the first letter that you would write to somebody who means the world to you, who would you send that first letter to?
Well, I'm already cheating because I'm sending it to three people in one. So you're gonna have to allow me. I mean, I know Desert Island Discs is really strict, but I'm hoping you're not as strict as they are.
I'm definitely not as strict. And also, you know, you've got that whole trifecta in Christianity.
Yes. It's a Trinity thing. All right. Well, just dress it up as a Trinity thing. So it's to my three rugby girls. I used to play rugby when I was at university, and like lots of girls who do PE, was led to believe that I wasn't particularly sporty. And you know what? I'm not particularly sporty, but I really like a group of enthusiastic people. You know, there are groups of enthusiastic people I don't love, but generally speaking, people who are enthusiastic, I enjoy. And I remember joining up for the rugby team, not really understanding what rugby was or the rules of anything, but I thought it sounded like a laugh. And so I joined up, and these three women, Jo Robbo, Kate Fitz and Tonia Bella, transformed my understanding of myself, of other women, and they are the most important female friendship that I have. And I want to write to them because they also symbolise all the other really important female friendships that I've had through my life. Those sisters that have just got you back, those women that see you when you don't see yourself, love you when you don't love yourself, pick you up, take the mickey out of you remorselessly, will get you in a taxi when you need to get in a taxi and go home, and will say you've had enough, get yourself off. They know where the bodies are buried, they know all the secrets, and they still love me anyway. And they are just the most fantastic bunch of women. And we met when we were 18 years old. And they are symbolic of lots of female friendships that I've had through my life. I mean, we haven't seen each other for ages now because of, you know, lockdown and so on. But we always just pick up where we left off.
So that was Joe, Tony and...
Joe, Tony and Kate.
Two Kates.
Two Kates.
My very close friendship group of girls has two Jesses and two Amys, and it's just a nightmare. It's a nightmare.
They're the sort of women that, you know, I could phone them now and say, I need you. And they go, right, well, I'm there. There's no question that they've got my back at every available opportunity. And I'm so grateful for them. And we joke that, you know, because we're getting to a certain age now. You know, we're women in our 40s and 50s. We've been together a long time. So we start to joke about, you know, who's going to go first. We start to laugh about that. Because we're quite, I have to say, if you could overhear us in conversation, you would be absolutely, well, you wouldn't be horrified, but lots of people go, she's a vicar, really? I mean, we're awful. Sometimes we'll be texting each other and I'll start doing this really dirty laugh. And Graham will go, my husband will go, rugby girls, and I'll go, yeah. And he'll go, what they say, and I'll go, it's best you don't know it, it'd only upset you, you know, because it's just awful.
We record the laughs on WhatsApp and we send each other dirty laughing.
I love that.
On WhatsApp, into the WhatsApp group.
I love that. They knew me before I was married, they knew me before I was ordained, they knew me before I was on the telly box, they knew me before all of that stuff. And the other thing is, when you do something that's got a public profile, sometimes the friendships can get a bit weird. Old friendships get a bit weird when you do start doing stuff in the public eye, I think. So there are friendships that I had before I was on telly box and doing what I do that have not really survived in the same way. But this one's got stronger. They are just ecstatic and pleased for me and just joyous in all the, and I do it in inverted commas, success that they've seen me have, whatever success means.
I think that comes of age though, doesn't it? That in friendship, that comes of age where you stop feeling like somebody's in front of you or getting more than you. Why haven't I got kids yet? Why has she got a better job? It comes of age where you just are happy that the people in your life are happy, and you start to, you know, even if they get something that you might have really wanted, you just go, I'm really glad they got that. I'm really glad that they got something that was really brilliant. And I don't think we make anywhere near enough of female friendships. We spend our whole lives talking about how a network of men, for example, are, you know, we can't network with men. They're all doing everything on the golf course and women can't get in. And I just think it's absolutely rubbish because the best networks in the world, I think, are female friendships. And we don't know how to put it into words somehow. We don't know how to say, you know, if I needed a casserole, I want to be on my doorstep by the end of the day. And if my kids need picking up, they will walk out of work and go and get my kids for me. It's all these small actions that women's friendships does to keep women going. And no matter that, we might get, you know, be more likely to be murdered in our homes and we get paid less and, you know, we have to pay more for pink roses than they pay for blue ones. I still think it's better to be a woman because of what you just described.
And there's that thing of once I'd stop buying into the narrative that I have to be in competition with other women, once I'd park that, it transformed so many of my friendships. I was having a massive issue with jealousy with one of my female clergy friends, a girl called Anna, who is everything I'm not. She's 6 foot tall, leggy, skinny, you know, unbelievable. Like, she walks in a room and everybody turns. She's one of those kind of people. And I was really struggling with jealousy, good old fashioned green-eyed monster jealousy. And the narrative, we were in the same church, actually. I was the curate and she was one of the workers in the church. And so we were in the same workplace. And it was, you know, this town's not big enough for the both of us. And people kept going, oh, well, Anna did this like this. And people do it. They sort of play you off against each other. And it was almost like this church isn't big enough for two. I went to see her and I said, I'm having this real problem with this. Let's talk it through. And we talked it through and we had a bit of a shout at each other. And we had a bit of a cry at each other. And now it's just once we got rid of all that patriarchy that other people had, and society and history and misogyny had attached to what the narrative is between two women, once we'd parked all that, just this most beautiful friendship blossomed out of it. It was so gorgeous. So my female friendships, and this letter I'm writing to my three girls, my three rugby girls, is symbolic of all that. It's symbolic of my swim sisters that I got cold water swimming with, that have dressed me when I haven't been able to dress myself because I couldn't string a sentence together because I've just been in ice. It's symbolic of Anna, who I dealt with that big jealousy issue, and other female clergy. And it is the rugby girls that literally, when a scrum collapsed on me, pulled other people off me to get to the bottom to go, you were all right? And I went, ugh. And they went, up you get then.
Have you told them how much they mean to you?
Yeah, I wrote to them during lockdown.
Oh, you did? You wrote them during lockdown? That is why I'm doing this, because I got really, really upset over lockdown that people I loved, I might never see them again. And so, yeah, so what did you say to them in your letter?
Well, I got a piece of paper and I got my nice ink pen out, you know, the one that you save for best. I got my nice cartridge pen out and my nice paper because I've got a writing box. It's an old picnic camper and it's got all my writing paper in and my stamps and my envelopes and all that sort of stuff.
You're taking letter writing to the next level is all I'm going to say, Kate.
I mean, I have a proper like thing that I sit down and I write my letters. I just love it because I love getting letters, so I love giving them. And I sat and I wrote and I just wrote what I've just said about their friendship and about how it is the most important in my life. We joke that when we eventually die, we're going to carry each other's coffins in, which is hilarious because Kate Fitz and Joe Robber are 6 foot two and Tony Abella's 5'3". So I'll be on a slant like that. My feet will slide to the bottom at box. And just that they are the most important friendship of my life. And they have taught me more about myself than I could ever learn from anywhere else. That they sustain me, that they mould me, that they shape me, that they catch myself, they help me to catch myself on, as they say. You know, when I've got ideas too big for my boots or I'm sounding like a complete prat, you know, they won't put away any celeb or showbiz nonsense. The thing is for me is they're always happy for me. If something goes right, they're really happy for me. Without any baggage.
My friends have this rule where I get a number of fancy mentions in one evening. You can say five fancy mentions about people you've met or things you've done. And after that, we're basically going to smack you around the face.
Like, mine go, right, okay, whose phone number you got on your phone? And should we text? And I go, well, we could text Dermot O'Leary if you wanted. Do you want to do that? And they go, ooh!
Well, one of my very best friends, Alex, she works in sort of theatre and show busy stuff. And so her phone is as good as mine. And one time, very, very drunkenly, we did text Benedict Cumberbatch.
You didn't text him like pictures of you?
No, good Lord. I spend all day telling people not to send intimate images. No.
It's just like, that's why actually we're going away. Me and the rugby girls have got a reunion weekend planned, obviously enough, you know, because we're allowed to now do some stuff together. So we do have a no phones rule, no social media, no phones rule.
That is absolutely important. That I'm always like, don't put this on social media. Don't do that.
I can ruin myself. I don't need them to ruin me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's it. Don't worry. I've got a big enough mouth all by myself. So for each of the people that we talk about, I'm going to ask you to tell me how you would sign off your letter, the words that you'd bring together in writing that final paragraph. So how would you sign off the letter to Joe, Tony and Kate?
You three represent my greatest female friendship. Sisters who have encouraged me to find my place and find my voice and speak loudly, even if my voice shakes. You know me even when I don't know myself. I've laughed so hard and so enthusiastically with you that I was in danger of losing control of my bodily functions. And if I did, I know you would have cleared up the mess. Thank you for your friendship. And thank you that every time we see each other, we get to pick up just where we left off. Mostly taking the mick out of one another. I love you, Steve-O.
Oh, so lovely. I feel a little bit tearful.
I cried writing it. Are you kidding me? I was in bits.
I know. I mean, it is hard, actually. It is hard. That's nice. You cry happy tears. It is hard.
Well, it's connection, isn't it? It's what being human's about. It's about making connection with yourself, making connection with other humans, and making connection with something bigger than you, something that's universal, you know, love, power, God, whatever you want to call it. And for me, that's actually what is the meaning of life, is connection.
Well, yeah, you see, I think that I'm not a religious person, Kate. I was raised by basically communists. Communists who were at one time altar boys and girls, but who grew into communism. They weren't communists, of course, but not far off. And to me, I suppose, it's not that I don't have faith. I'm absolutely full of faith. I've got faith in bag loads, but it is the people where I find my higher power, my faith. I'm stunned by the people that I get to meet. I'm absolutely bowled over that they could exist.
Humans are brilliant, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Some of them are absolutely cracking and they're amazing. And I'm like, you don't know how amazing you are. Oh my God, you're brilliant. Right, so on to the second letter. So I have asked you to prepare. Now this, if previously isn't a sort of tearjerker, which in your case it was, is a letter to someone who's no longer around. Now, obviously, that doesn't have to be somebody who's died, or it could be somebody, you know, you just don't see anymore. So who is your second letter to?
Well, you were talking about upbringing just there and talking about how you were brought up. I wasn't brought up religious at all. I mean, we were christened as babies, but you know, we didn't go to church ever. We didn't even go at Christmas or Easter. That was, you know, that was a posh thing that posh people did. So we didn't go to church. Our fingernails weren't clean enough for church and we didn't have nice enough shoes. So we didn't go there. And so I started going to church because I saw a boy at school that I liked the look of, right? And I said to my friend Katie, "Who's he?" And my friend Katie said, "He's the vicar's son, the son of the vicar."
He's literally the son of a preacher man.
He's the son of a preacher man. And I said, "I think I might start going to church." And she said, I go to that church where his dad's a vicar. Do you want to come?" So I said, yes. So my friend Katie took me along to church. I went for a snog and I came away with a dog collar. This was not what I had planned at all. The most difficult conversation my entire life was to go home to my parents and tell them I'd started to believe in God. They thought I'd joined a cult and I had to reassure them it was just the Church of England. It was probably going to be fine. You know, they were like, "Oh my word, our Katie's got religion." You know, it was just like, it was like the worst thing that's ever happened. I mean, they've got their head around it now and it's all fine now. And now whenever there's a family funeral or a family wedding or whatever, it's, "Oh, our Katie will do you a deal. She'll do you a good deal on that." You know, "What for our Katie? She'll know." So it was a shock to me. And what happened was I started going out with the vicar's son. Just like the Canadian Mounties, I always get my man. So I started going out with the vicar's son and we've been married 23 years. We've been together for 30 years. So we started going out when I was about 18. We had a couple of dodgy years while I was at university. Who doesn't? What was it Bill Clinton said? A normal university experience was what I had. but yeah, we've been together for a long time. But when I was at university, my father-in-law, as he would have been, sadly died in his 50s and he was a kidney patient waiting for a transplant, got his transplant, caught an infection and died. And me and Graham were going out at the time, but like I said, we were, you know, I was away at uni, he was working, it was a long distance relationship. We were officially going out, but you know, and it really formed us. His death really cemented our relationship for one another. And I remember his mum asking me to sit on the front pew at the funeral at 19 years old for the funeral of my boyfriend's dad. It struck me that I was in deeper than I thought I was in this relationship. And it was one of those moments where you think, oh, actually, it's time to, what's the phrase, poop or get off the pot, really. It was one of those moments. And the thing is about David Botley, he died the year after women were ordained into the priesthood, into the Church of England. The news came through that women were going to be ordained. 11 months later, David was dead. And he'd always joked that there'd be another Reverend Botley. He'd always had, you know, because he'd got two sons and a daughter, and he'd always looked at the boys and gone, oh, one of you is going to end up getting ordained. There's going to be another Reverend Botley before end of close of play. Mark my words, there'll be another Reverend Botley. But of course, we didn't think that it would be me. No inkling that that would be the path that I would end up on. And it makes me really sad, not just that he didn't get to see that, but he didn't get to see his grandchildren. And we're fast approaching the age that he was. And there's something about that, isn't there? When you start to reach those ages that the people you love died at, that you suddenly go, oh, crumbs. How does that feel? Because when he died at 53, he seemed like an old man. Mm. But of course, now I'm 46, that don't seem like an old man at all. You know, I do funerals a lot for people that I love. It's a weird thing. It's a weird thing to do funerals for people that you know and love. And there's a real sadness for me that, obviously, I was only 19 at the time, so it wasn't an option for me to do that for him. But I kind of want to go, can you see? Can you see? Look at my collar. Can you see? I'm one too.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I definitely need religious education. Don't you believe that he can see you? And no,
do you know, I hope he's having far too good a time to bother, really.
So my mum said, I don't know, I'm not sure about heaven. What if I don't know anyone?
I just kind of hope that he's having far too good a time, you know. And I say that a lot to the people that I visit who are dying, which is obviously part of my job, you know. And you go and visit people and you know, there were no atheists on Titanic, all of a sudden people seem to want to see a priest. And so you go along and they go, I don't know what I believe. And I go, no, neither do I most of the time. Try not to worry about it. That's why it's called faith and not sure. And they go, what, you doubt? Every day, every single day, I wake up and go, what if this is just a load of nonsense? It's a bedrock and salvation of my entire existence. But at the same time, it could all be wrong, right? Could all be wrong.
I mean, it could all be wrong, but I like to think that, you know, and also when you say you'd hope he's having a good time, I think that if I could see my family and watch them, that it would be like watching Love Island. That is the thing that I would tune into if I was in the hereafter.
Shouting, what's she done to her lips? What's she done to her lips?
That top is no friend of yours. Take it off.
And this is what I do when I go and visit people who are dying, you know, and I hold the hand and I pray with them and I say, what do you want to, because sometimes they want to tell you something, and often the first words out of the mouth are, I'm not really religious, but, and I'll go, it's okay. So now's not the time for us to discuss all this. It's fine. And I'll always say to them when I leave, will you save me a seat? Will you save me a seat? Because you're going to get there before me, right? So will you save me a seat? So, you know, it's that idea that I do believe in another consciousness. I don't know what it looks like. I don't know what the details are. I believe that it's even better than this, which, you know, life can be blooming lovely, can't it? But it makes me sad that he didn't get to see my ordination, that he didn't get to see the mess that I've made of things, and that the wisdom was taken, that, you know, because he'd walked that path before me to ordination, to being a priest, and I would have just liked to pick his brains, really. Come on, tell me what I need to know.
Yeah.
Give me the inside, Jen.
Also, like, disagree with him on things and, like, wrestle those things together on a similar path.
I don't really know what he made of women. I know he was fairly conservative in his views with a small C. So I don't know what he made of women's ordination. I don't quite know if he got his head around it. So I don't know what he'd think. Perhaps he'll be waiting there with her to go, well, goodness me, I'm not happy about this.
I like to think if he is there and he's watching and he knows, I like to think that even if he was against it in the beginning, maybe he's been convinced by now, because...
Well, that happens a lot.
Yeah, I don't meet many people who are against women in the Church of England anymore.
I buried a guy weeks ago, months ago, it might be months now, a few months ago, I buried a guy a few months ago. He was dead. I didn't just bury him, by the way. And he would like that joke, so I don't think I'm being rude. A really good friend of mine called Dave, who I absolutely love to bits, older gentleman, and I was his vicar for a little while. And after about a month of being his vicar, he'd sort of been looking at me from a distance, and he sidled up to me and went, "Can I have a word?" And I thought, "Oh no, what have I done?" You know, like you do. "Oh no, what have I done?" And he said, "I need to tell you that when I heard we were getting a woman priest, I was very angry and very against the idea." And I went, "Oh, okay, Dave, I didn't know that. I'm really sorry." And he went, "And I also need to tell you, I was a bloody fool." And then just walked off. And I was like, that's just lovely.
That is lovely. And it's an experience I have as well. I have had constituents say, "I know that we were going to be getting a lady one."
A lady one. One of those lady MPs.
One of those lady ones. And you know what? You've been all right.
You're all right, you. I like it when they call me a vicarette, which I think makes him sound like a nicotine patch.
Cigarette, yeah, it does sound like a cigarette. I think that if he can see you, that he is watching you and he's not doing anything, and that is his fun. And because my husband, he works for a company that makes sort of virtual reality spaces. We have a virtual reality thing in our house. So you can go on Google Maps in virtual reality and you can go anywhere in the world. You can walk the Andes. You can walk the Andes. You can literally go to Kilimanjaro. You can go on safari. You can do anything. And do you know what every single person who puts it on does?
Go on.
Go and look at their house.
Of course they do. They can't look at the place where they live. Because why wouldn't they?
They go, "Oh, look, the car's on the drive." And you're like...
"Oh, look, there's the cat on the patio."
You can go and look at the Andes. You're never going to the Andes. But everybody... sometimes people do it in my house. I've watched people do it in my house. And I'm like, you're literally looking at the thing you could walk outside.
Outside.
And look at... That's you just hilarious. Saw it as you came into the house. But that so is because funny. People have a homing instinct. So I think that if he is watching...
I hope that don't leave us then. I see a lot of people that leave things unsaid with people that they love when they're coming to the end of their life. I see a lot of letters that go in a lot of coffins. I don't read them, obviously, unless I'm asked to. But a lot of those things... And, you know, and a lot of the time when people read out things in a eulogy or a poem at the funeral, it is their last letter to their loved one. You know, and those things are the things that I didn't, because of the way he died and because when he died, I didn't get a chance to say to him, and I would have liked that.
Oh, so how would you sign off the letter to him?
David, a lot has happened since we last saw each other. You wouldn't believe how much. And you know how you always used to say there's going to be another Reverend Botley? Well, there is, but it isn't Graham, it's me. The ordination of women happened just a few months before you died, and I know you were pretty traditional, so I'm not sure what you'd think, but I hope you'd be very proud that there's another Reverend Botley in the world. So from one Reverend Botley to another, thank you for your prayers and your presence, your wit and your wisdom that live on through your son, your grandson and your granddaughter. And would you save me a seat for when I get there? Love, Kate.
Oh, it's so lovely. I think he's convinced. I think he's convinced.
I'll persuade him when I get there, if not.
Do you think that there will be another one?
Another Reverend Botley? Oh, gosh. If there is, I think the Church of England will be a pile of smoking rubble the next morning, probably, and probably would do better for it. It wouldn't be a bad thing, necessarily.
I have to say, when they wouldn't let women be bishops, obviously I deal with the bishops a lot. The bishops work where I work.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, I have to say, I'm not entirely sure how I feel about a theocracy being part of our democracy.
Of course.
However... I rely on a bishop more often than not. I rely on the bishops a lot. They are some cracking people.
And their politics are usually pretty pretty right on.
the Bishop of Gloucester, I mean...
Rachel's a star.
She and I, we waded out on migrant women's rights, and she was... And it's much better coming from her because she's like a reasonable person who's calm, whereas I'm like shouting and screaming and calling everybody names.
I feel exactly the same about the bishops in the House of Lords. I'm like, I'm not sure we're there anymore as a society to have bishops in the House of Lords. But then they do things like that and I go, oh yeah, that's why they're there, isn't it? Because they're able to say things that other people aren't saying. By and large, social justice is... Because there was a bloke who was quite big on social justice. Beard, sandals, first century Middle East. He was quite a nice guy, I think. Son of Mary. He was quite big on social justice.
I went to a Catholic school earlier. There was a window thing of the Virgin Mary, but it was like interpretive. And I was like, oh, who's that? And these kids looked at me and they were like, it's the Virgin Mary. I was like...
It's Our Lady.
She's quite fundamental. Oh dear. Anyway, so your choices have been amazing so far, Kate. And we will be back to hear your final letter after a short break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Before the break, we talked about the letter you would send to someone who means the world to you and the letter that you would send to someone who's no longer around. The final letter is the letter you would send to somebody who might not know just how significant a role they've played in your life. So who would you share your gratitude for who might not know about it?
Well, when I was little, I know this is really hard to believe, but you're going to have to go with this one. I was very, very shy. I was the kind of kid that hid behind her mother's skirts, literally and metaphorically, would not talk to anybody. And I was brought up in a household where mostly the blokes and the women existed separately. You know, they came together at the working men's club but the men went and played snooker and the women sat and played bingo, and they existed largely separately. And I became a bit of a mouse child. I sat with the women and was a bit of a mouse child, and I remember being quite quiet. And my mum had a job for Sheffield City Council cleaning. She was a cleaner, she was a school dinner lady, she did the lollipop, she covered for the lollipop lady, she did all those kind of jobs. She left for school at 14, my mum, unable to read and write. She can read better now, but she's still not full literacy. So she did the cleaning jobs. Anyway, one of the cleaning jobs that she did was for a youth theatre. It was the heady days of the 1980s. It was socialist Sheffield. There was money for things like youth theatres run by the council. And the youth theatre that my mum cleaned for was a very post-1970s hippie youth theatre. So it was all very tie-dye. It was all very patchouli. People were barefoot. They were all vegans. And my mum would go in with her pledge and her bleach doing the toilets. That's what she did. And she got talking to them and they'd go, would you like an Earl Grey tea, Margaret? Like that. And she'd go, oh, no, love, I'll have a cup of PG tips. You know, it was that kind of thing. So my mum didn't really fit. But because it was around Greenham Common and it was socialist Sheffield, they were very inclusive and they wanted to draw her into their community, even though, you know, on paper, they didn't really have a lot in common. So my mum said, I've got a daughter who's really shy. Would you take her on at the youth theatre? And they said, yeah, of course we would, sort of thing. So off I was sent to this youth theatre where my mum cleaned the toilets. And the youth theatre took kids from about 12, 13. But because I was the daughter of the cleaner, they took me at 11. And we only did Shakespeare and Chaucer and classics, right? And all the other kids came from all around Sheffield, but I lived on the doorstep of this place. And they put me in a practice skirt, made out of a curtain, took me into the middle of the park where all my mates were sat on the swings, and made me do Tai Chi and breathing exercises and yoga and medieval Latin chant singing and all sorts of weird stuff that I would never have ever got anywhere near. And the person who ran the youth theatre was a woman called Meg Jepson. And she was the drama advisor for the county council. And she also ran this youth theatre. And it's amazing that she was paid to do that by the council. She was paid to provide this service. It was free. It's insane now, but we didn't think anything of it. And they gave her this old school, this old Victorian school, and said, there you go, there's your theatre, you go. And so I turned up and we were doing The Tempest, William Shakespeare's The Tempest, and I got cast as Ariel in The Tempest. But Meg had this thing where you didn't just learn your own part, you learn everybody's part in the play. And so that sometimes on opening night, before the curtain went up, she'd go, oh, by the way, you're not Ariel tonight, you're Prospero. And you would have to just go on and be Prospero. And that's what you would do at the age of 11 on the main stage of The Crucible. And at the time, it just didn't occur to me that this was a massive thing. And I blossomed. We did Beowulf in Old English. You know, we did Chaucer in the original, in Chaucer's English. We did Shakespeare. We did all this stuff. It was all free. I learned how to do fencing. I learned grade one fencing and stage fighting and all sorts of things. But she also used to make us clean the space as well before we used it. So there's my mum cleaning toilets, and there's us cleaning toilets after her, even though they didn't need clean. She's going, what are you saying about my job? Have I not done a good enough job? No, mum, it's just we have to clean the work area before we can work in it. You know, it was all very zen. Everybody was equal. We used to sit down and talk about our feelings, all that sort of stuff. And I remember I used to open my lunchbox, and all the other kids would have, like, you know, hummus and beetroot salad and homemade things, and I'd have my Dairylea triangle and my packet of crisp and penguin biscuit. And it was just like, Kate, you might want to think about the toxins that you're putting in your body. Here, have some lentils. And it was all very like that, very right on. But Meg was a woman that just took everybody exactly as they were. And she taught me how to act, how to present myself, how to stand up and speak with confidence, how to find that voice, literally metaphorically find my voice. She encouraged me to sing in front of people. I'm an awful singer, but she sat there and listened to me sing. And she taught me how to dance. We learned how to do sort of medieval dancing and stuff. It was just amazing. She cast me as the nurse in Romeo and Juliet, which I absolutely loved. I was Malvolio in Twelfth Night. I got to do all. And also what that means now is when I go into rooms, I mean, I work for the BBC and the Church of England, predominantly people who are privately educated. And what that means when I go into those rooms now, I can talk about some of the stuff that they talk about. And I can talk about it with confidence, and I can speak a language that I did not speak before. And Meg drew something out of me. Also means when I stand at the communion table and I'm breaking bread and I'm pouring out wine and I'm saying, this is my body, and I have to pretend to be Jesus, I can draw down all that training that I had. And it did not occur to me until I stepped into my presenter shoes, until I stepped into my ordination shoes, that actually Meg formed me and some of the friendships that I've had for life. Now, the reason that Meg can't understand that I am so grateful to her is that she's developed dementia and she is non-communicative now. And so a couple of years ago, we had a youth theatre reunion, and there was Meg sat in her chair, and we sang for her. We sang some of the songs that she taught us, and we said some of the words that she taught us. And she smiled and was present for just a few moments. And dementia is such a horrible illness that robs people of their life before they're dead. It's horrible. And so I would do anything to be able to say to her how grateful I was and how grateful I am for the skills that I draw down on every single day.
The nicest thing about the story is that you would never have got that. And the saddest thing is that that just doesn't exist anymore. Like, that just doesn't.
No, it doesn't. You know, and my first paid piece of work was somebody phoned Meg up from Radio 4 and said, we need a regional accent for an afternoon play on Radio 4. And Meg sent me along to the audition. And I did an audition for Radio 4 when I was 13. And I got on Radio 4. And then I did a play for ITV when I was 15. And I had all these experiences that I would never have left my own front doorstep, Jess, if it hadn't been for that. Because I would never have seen a hall. Went down to that big London to Broadcasting House and stayed in a hotel. And got paid, you know, got paid for a job. And it was, I think it was like 150 quid. It was more money than I could ever think of, you know, and it set me in really good stead. But yeah, it's really sad that those things just don't exist anymore.
Yeah, they just don't exist, especially in that sort of slightly paternalistic bohemian state that you're describing. I went to a thing at a place called All Saints Church in Birmingham that was literally called Women's Liberation Playgroup, that was literally exactly the same women who, and most of the time we would just spend our time making banners for Greenham Common. Greenham Common was very, very important at the time. But it is that idea that there were collectives of people doing things with a little bit of money from the council or from like some sort of form of collective endeavour, cooperatives. There's a lot of stuff, and the faith communities definitely provide this sort of.
But it wasn't a charity, it was funded. I learnt so many different skills, and it was very right on, you know. It was, you know, I remember dressing up as Gawain and the Green Knight in the middle of Sheffield High Street in Fargate while women are going past with their trolleys to go to the market to pick up the black pudding and the tripe, and going, "Ee, what you doing, love?" And I'm going, "Oh, therefore, forsooth, and right now." I thought I was something I wasn't, but it was great, and I had such a great time.
Oh, how awful that you know, you can't let her know how much she changed your life. I think as well, oh, look at me with all my faith.
I like to think she does.
I think she knows. I think that people like Meg, and you meet them all the time, you meet people who just want to, like, you know, make things better for ordinary people. I think people like Meg, deep down in their hearts, know, and they're doing it, and they get sucker from the fact that they're doing it. And
well, she never had a family. She never, you know, she never found someone that she wanted to spend the whole life with. She never had children, because we were a family. That's what we did. She was there every day with this ragtaggle bunch of 50 or so kids trying to get them to do Shakespeare.
I can't think of.
And we took ourselves ever so seriously. You know, main stage of the Crucible doing Prospero at like 12 years old or whatever. I thought I was the dogs. I was like, do you know what I mean? I remember we didn't have school uniform in Sheffield in the 1980s because, again, all right on and all that sort of stuff. So I remember going to the charity shops and buying like big overcoats and trilbies because I was so bohemian.
I mean, did you ever get to be Titania? Because that is the only, there's only one speech in Shakespeare that I know, and it is a speech by Titania. It's that one.
I always wanted to be Kate in Taming of the Shrew, of course I did, except for the last bit. We like to skip over the last bit where she says it's all about the boys.
That is the best one, though. Taming of the Shrew. Obviously, Shakespeare's from my neck of the woods, so I think he would have sounded like me.
Yeah, well, so they say.
Yeah, that's what... Well, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I'm not entirely sure he was that cracking to his wives, didn't he leave? He left his wife his second best bed in the will. That's what he left her.
That's right.
Second best bed. Like, where did the first one go? That story is either apocryphal.
Yeah, well, that's what the question begs.
Where's your first best bed gone, Shakespeare? So how would you sign off the letter to Meg?
Meg, I had such fun at youth theatre. I learnt about hard work and determination, how to mop a floor and how to play Prospero on the main stage of the Crucible Theatre. Thank you for helping me find my confidence. The skills you've taught me are used every single day. I know that because of dementia, you don't remember me anymore, but I could never forget you. Love, Kate.
So lovely. So, the letters that you have written to your amazing women friends, so that's Joe, Tony and Kate, telling them exactly how you wouldn't be able to cope without them, and you hope that they feel that about you, although I'm sure that you're certain that they do. The letter you wrote to David in the hope that he could see you as you are today and know that you carried on with his legacy, and the thank you letter to Meg, who can't remember you, but you want to say a thank you for the opportunity to be who you are today. So how do you feel now that you've written these letters, and did anything about putting them together surprise you?
I thought they'd be really difficult to write, but actually once you get started on these kind of things, it's instinctive, and it just reminds me again that it's really important to say the things that I want to say to the people I want to say them to, even if they're not here anymore. You know, that there's something really valuable in writing this stuff down, because texts disappear, social media posts disappear, phone calls, you won't remember them, but those letters, they are treasure. It's like treasure.
When you find them, it's like treasure. I found a letter. My mum died 10 years ago. And about the third year after she died, I found... I mean, it wasn't a particularly loving letter. It was teaching me how to make a Christmas pudding. and the passwords for her Google account. I found a letter in a handbag, and it was just like, oh, hi, Jep. Like, don't forget to buy this, this and this. And it just was like finding treasure, finding my mum's handwriting, and her bossing me around and being the person she had been to me was like finding treasure.
It is like, it is our handwriting as well, isn't it? Because there's something about that that's like a fingerprint of our personality. When you get a handwritten letter, you know that someone's taken the time. When someone sends a handwritten letter, it always reminds me of handwriting practice at school. You know the journey they've been on to get to that point to be able to hold that pen and write that letter, and the effort it takes to put a stamp on it and go to the post box. Letters are treasure. They can be such a small and easy to access thing. Never as expensive as a diamond, but very richly received.
Absolutely. So, well, thank you so much, Kate, for sharing your letters.
You're so welcome. A delight to talk to you.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Honestly, a pleasure is all mine. I feel like we had the same upbringing at the same... We came across the same women in the same boutique hangings.
Yeah.
And the same, and had a very similar experience.
Hey, some of these people wouldn't know a meat raffle if it hit them in the face.
I went somewhere the other day and there was a meat raffle going on, yes! And I was like, this is so retro. I love a meat raffle.
I think there's a TV series in Working Men's Club of our childhood. Going around with tombolas, I used to love a tombola.
The Treasury is currently pretending that it's moving to Wolverhampton, and I'm going to write a sitcom about Rishi Sunak living in Willenhall in Wolverhampton.
Living in Wolverhampton.
Down at Bilston Market.
Genius.
just
brilliant.
So funny.
Having cockles on a plate with vinegar.
Exactly, just like, this is so funny.
It's not happening, is it?
Well, thank you so much for your time. It was a total pleasure.
I'm going for a swim now in the lake. I'm going to throw myself in a lake.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips. If you want to hear more conversations just like this, make sure you follow Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips on the podcast provider of your choice. And why not write a letter to your friends, telling them all about this podcast? You can also follow us on social media. We're at Jess Phillips Pod.
Goodbye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.